The following is a meeting with devotees with His Holiness Srila Satsarupa Das Goswami, given on May 7th, 2000 in Dublin, Ireland.
I'm going to speak this morning about associating with devotees and the reality of that is also that we see the devotees have various faults, but we should not concentrate on the faults, but see the good qualities. And if we associate with devotees, we don't associate with non-devotees, at least not in the same way. So I would like to present this in the method of argument that some of the acharyas use, called Purvapaksha, which Baladeva Vijayabhusan used in his commentary on Vedanta Sutra. That is, you first present your Vaishnava point of view, which I just did briefly, and then you bring up also briefly opposition, and then you make a more conclusive, a comprehensive conclusion by including that objection. So I have an objection to association with devotees in a letter I received from a devotee who said she is, for about a year now, she has stopped associating with devotees. I know that many devotees have struggled against the emphasis on external behavior that characterized an immature ISKCON. We've all seen many examples of heavy-handed preachers who would grind you to pieces for forgetting to put on tilak and then turn around and run off with someone else's teenage daughter. Some devotees can see beyond this kind of stuff and practice what they know is right and good, despite the abuse of others. I had always been somewhat able to do that, I thought, but it took a lot of internal contortions to accomplish, and I just can't anymore. Perhaps it began at some point while raising my children, the sense that there is a certain pretense involved in maintaining ISKCON. To some degree, you feel you must whitewash some of the rude and degrading behavior of certain devotees, particularly men, as they relate to women, to perpetuate this myth that devotees are purer than karmis because they're chanting the names of God. The children, especially as they enter the teenage years, are so hypersensitive to hypocrisy. I know that my child would see the example of my own family, she means her material parents, and see that they are very kind and loving people. They never chant, they eat meat, and they are certainly far from perfect, but they are warm and personal. They really care about us. They have very little money, yet whatever they have, they share. And later, let the men have their starring roles in the ISKCON drama. Let them thump their chests and rape their women. Let them tear each other to shreds debating the guru issue. Let them twist and manipulate Prabhupada's words, then show up at Mangal Arati and lead the kirtan. I just don't want to be around any of it. So we can sympathize with some of the points there, but I guess we wanted to ask right away, is this the only or the whole picture of ISKCON devotees? And what I want to do is present Prabhupada's point of view. Inevitably I'll present my point of view, but in one sense that's not so important as compared to what Prabhupada says about the association with devotees and his awareness of the faults of devotees particularly. And so I'll start to present some evidence of his point of view. First is a letter in 1972 to a devotee named Atreya Rishi. A little background is that he was a graduate of the Harvard School of Business, and he was living in New York City at the time he met Krishna Consciousness, had a very high-paying job with a business consultant firm. And so when he joined the temple, the New York temple was in Brooklyn at that time, he saw right away that they were misspending money. He could really, with his business background, he could really understand it. They were spending very lavishly, and things weren't managed well. And he also saw that devotees were quarreling among each other. And as we'll see in Prabhupada's letter, when he replies, Atreya wrote to him saying that he thought these difficulties were because of impersonalism. I have an odd conclusion, but maybe in the beginning, when you're a devotee, you hear that the impersonalists are so bad, you think that anything bad, you must be an impersonalist. So Prabhupada says that's not the fault there. Let's see. It is not so much that because there may be some faults in our God brothers and God sisters, or because there may be some mismanagement or lack of cooperation, that this is due to being impersonalists. No. It is the nature of the living condition to always have some fault. Even in the spiritual world, there is some fault and envy. Sometimes the gopis will quarrel over Krishna's favor. And once Krishna was so much attracted to Radharani that by mistake he tried to milk the bull instead of the cow. And sometimes when the gopis used to put on their dress and makeup for seeing Krishna, they would be too much hasty and smear kumkum and mascara in the wrong places, and their ornaments and dresses would appear as if small children had been trying to dress themselves, and they were not very expert like that. There are so many examples, but it is not the same as material fault or material envy. It is transcendental because it is all based on Krishna. Sometimes when one gopi would serve Krishna very nicely, the others would say, oh, she has done so nicely, now let me do better for pleasing Krishna. That is envy, but it is transcendental without malice. So we shall not expect that anywhere there is any utopia. Rather, that is impersonalism. So far he's been talking about the gopis, which we may delight in hearing, but think right away, well, this has got nothing to do with what Atreya saw in the Brooklyn temple. He didn't see any gopis. He saw these very fallible ISKCON neophytes. But now Prabhupada addresses that. People should not expect that even in the Krishna conscious society there will be utopia. Because devotees are persons, therefore there will always be some lacking. But the difference is that they're lacking because they have given up everything to serve Krishna. Money, jobs, reputation, wealth, big educations, everything. Their lackings have become transcendental because despite everything they may do, their topmost intention is to serve Krishna. So, Prabhupada was very inclined toward his own devotees, disciples. He was very proud of what they had been able to do, how they had been able to give up for Krishna. And so he would allow a great deal of wrong and still say that basically they were right, for at least for being devotees. He could chastise them and he could change things. You can be sure that when Prabhupada learned that money was being mismanaged in the temple, he put a proper person in charge to see that things were done, and he would listen to the quarreling. But the main point is that the devotees are rightly situated as long as they're continuing to practice. He quotes, "One who is engaged in devotional service despite the most abominable action is to be considered saintly because he is rightly situated. The devotees of Krishna are the most exalted persons on this planet, better than kings, all of them." So that's like in direct opposition to the letter I read, especially the point, "I'm tired of perpetuating the myth that devotees are better than other people just because they chant the names of God." Prabhupada says, yes, they are better just because they chant the names of God. So we should always remember that, and like the bumblebee, always look for the nectar or the best qualities of a person, not like the utopians who are like the flies who always go to the open sores or find the faults in a person. And because they cannot find any utopia, or because they cannot find anyone without faults, they want to become void, merge, nothing. They think this is utopia, to become free of personality. We've heard that example many times. Be like the bees and go to the honey. Don't be like the flies and go to the sores. but I never heard it quite with this extra concept in there of that the fly is compared to a person looking for utopia. And when he can't see perfection, then he quickly points out, there's a fault, because he has some idea that everything is supposed to be perfect. Well, you're devotees, right? Aren't you supposed to be perfect? I see so many faults. But you don't see the very good thing. So if there is sometimes slight disagreements between devotees, it is not due to impersonalism, but it is because they are persons, and such disagreements should not be taken very seriously. The devotee is always pessimistic about the material world, but he is very optimistic about the spiritual life. So in this way, you should consider that anyone engaged in Krishna's service is always the best person. So that's Prabhupada's point of view, which he is also the Vedic point of view, Bhagavad Gita. And now, I'll give you another evidence. Prabhupada, in writing a letter to a woman who wrote to Prabhupada that she had met some devotees on book distribution, and they appeared to be very negative, she said. So Prabhupada says he doesn't know the exact circumstances of what happened, but kindly forgive my beloved disciples for any unkindness or indiscretion on their part. He doesn't say that in some blind way that, well, they never did anything wrong, you must be wrong, that you thought the devotees were negative. He says, kindly forgive them. We might say, well, Prabhupada really didn't know what the devotees were doing when they went out to distribute books, how they tricked people, or how they were just so negative. So maybe he didn't always know. But what he did know was sufficient for him to make his conclusions. Please forgive them. After all, to give up one's life completely for serving the Lord is not an easy thing. And Maya, or the illusory material energy, tries especially hard to again entrap those who have left her service to become devotees. Well, Prabhupada knew that his devotees were trying to get out of the service of Maya and were trying to serve Krishna. He wasn't under the illusion that they were all fixed up under the service of Krishna, but he knew what they were trying to do, if they were sincere. Therefore, in order to withstand the attack of Maya and remain strong under all conditions of temptation, young or inexperienced devotees in the neophyte stage of devotional service will sometimes adopt an attitude against those things or persons which may possibly be harmful or threatening to their tender devotional creepers. They may even overindulge in such feelings just to protect themselves, and thus they will appear to some non-devotees, who are perhaps themselves still very much enamored by the material energy of Maya, to be negative or pessimistic. Here we see Prabhupada is quite a psychologist to understand the mind of the neophyte devotee and how they come off because they're not developed enough, so negative. And that's not how a devotee should be, but he understands, well, that's an awkward stage they're in right now, but they'll get better. When a devotee, we all know what it is, how a devotee comes off real negative, talks about bags of stool, people are just bags of stool, and you're a demon, and this kind of thing, and people, where these people are so fanatical and so angry and down and negative, they must be wrongly guided. And Prabhupada says, yes, I know that what they're doing is they're feeling that they don't want to be attached to illicit sex anymore, and so they're trying to protect themselves, and when they see it, they're feeling threatened, and so they're indulging in their feelings of trying to save themselves from Maya. But some people who Prabhupada sees it, and certainly sharp materialists, they see it too, and they think, well, that's the whole story, that this devotee is just a frustrated person, a fanatic, who himself wants material desires, and somebody has made him deny them, and the poor devotee is just is all screwed up. But Prabhupada sees it's just an awkward stage for a neophyte. The actual fact is that this material world is a miserable, negative place. full of danger at every step. Then later he says, we must view everything material with a pessimistic eye. You refer to the word love several times in your letter, but the actual fact is there is no love in this material world. Prabhupada, then he starts preaching real hard in a way that I don't think Lynn Ludwig liked. But he had to come out and show what his colors are from the viewpoint of Narada, the viewpoint of Vyas, the viewpoint of transcendentalists, that this isn't a love and peace abode. It's a place of unhappiness, and real love is with Krishna. So sometimes people, they don't even like the advanced devotee. But there's a great deal of difference between the advanced devotee and the unadvanced, like in the song about the six Goswamis, Dira, Adira. They were pleasing both to the Diras and to the Adiras. So that's about all I wanted to read. Or just at the end, he says, they have given up affection for family, friends, wife, country, race, and so on, which is all based on the bodily concept of life or flickering sense gratification. They have become a little detached from Maya's love or lust, and they want Krishna's love or endless, full, rewarding love. But they have not yet developed to that point, that's all. We cannot expect that all of a sudden your countrymen, who are addicted to so many bad habits, will give up flesh, eating flesh, taking intoxicants, having illicit sex, and so many other nasty things, and overnight become great self-realized souls. That's not possible. To err is human. Therefore, in a neophyte stage, we may always expect some discrepancies. Kindly see things in this light and forgive their small mistakes. The big thing is that they have given everything, even their lives, to Krishna, and that is never a mistake. So it's the spiritual father and the founder Acharya, and he stands up for his devotees, just seeing that they're chanting, they're trying to follow the four rules, they're preaching, living in a Krishna conscious community. And this is such a tremendous thing that we have to forgive their discrepancies. Now I have a tape by Prabhupada, so we can hear his voice. And just prior to this, he was talking about how to get that the sinful life rests on four pillars, like a building, and we have to break down these four pillars, which are like the four rules. And so the boys and girls, as he calls their devotees, who are doing this, they're not ordinary.
But we are put into special condition now that we are being purified and at the same time again committing something sinful. Because we have been practiced to these habits since a very, very long time. Not only in this life, but also in the past life. Therefore, the process should be constantly chanting Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna,
Hare Hare, Hare
Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama. In this way, when your portion of sinful life will be completely made zero, you immediately become eligible to be transferred to the Krishna Loka. That's all. That is stated in the Bhagavad Gita. Jisam antagato, not only that, here also, this Bhakti Yoga process cannot be accepted by any ordinary man, a sinful man. Those who are engaged in this temple worship of Krishna, offering food, offering arati, offering decorating, changing dress, preparing food, so many endless men, going outside, collecting some money for the expenditure of the temple, maintaining the establishment. We have got to spend more than $2,000 for this particular establishment. And we have 26. So we have to work But not work like the Kurmi. We have to work for Krishna. That is our duty. So in this way, those who are engaged in Krishna business, in Krishna consciousness business, they are already free from the sinful reaction of life. They are not ordinary persons. Otherwise, how they are restraining themselves from these four principles of sinful life? They are not ordinary persons. Therefore, Krishna says in the Bhagavad Gita, the one can be engaged in the Krishna consciousness activities when he is completely freed from all.
So again, they're not ordinary. Of course, I'm going to leave time, and I hope we can hear different viewpoints. I have a little more to present. I had another letter that came at the same time with a positive view of devotee association. This is from a person who was out of touch from devotees for quite a few years and entered the academic world, and but is now associating with devotees and actually never left in spirit. And she wrote me recently. I asked her, "Do you have devotee friends?" At first I asked her what was her viewpoint toward the Bhagavatam, and what was her... I really didn't know so much where she was at. And then I said, "Do you have devotee friends?" She said, "I have many friends who are devotees of some sort or another. I'm not in a position to judge anyone, certainly. And I value their friendships and the opportunity to speak about issues close to the heart to, quote, name my God, unquote." I never heard that expression. She puts it in quotes as if it's an expression. But it's an interesting expression that you should be able to name your God, like my God is Allah or my God is Krishna. So it's a great relief, or it's a great thing to be able to know some people who you can say Krishna to, name your God, and refer to Bhagavatam or CC stories in company that knows what I'm talking about, even if they don't always share my views. Pranada and Archana City, of course, are very great devotees. I don't get to see them often, but it is especially wonderful to see them and to see you. So, that was nice. That is nice. To expression of why we like to be with devotees. Because, I can think of some non-devotees who I would like to be with. I remember some time ago I met a... since I'm a... living as a sannyasi, the Christian equivalent to that is a monk. I met a monk in Belgium who was interested in Krishna consciousness. He had some books. And he was a Carmelite. So he was practicing, that's the Carmelite, they have the tradition that they have Teresa of Avila, Teresa of Lisieux, St. John of the Cross. So I was interested in what he was doing. And so we were talking together. It was very interesting. And or if I could talk with someone who is a poet and who is a spiritually inclined, I might be interested to talk with people like that. But to be able to name your God, that you can only do with devotees. I was reading in Shonaka Rishi's journal, ISKCON Journal, Communications Journal. In one issue, he stated ISKCON's position about interfaith relationship, which had been approved by the executive committee of the GBC. And then the next issue, he had 9 different responses. And one of them was a Catholic response. And he was very encouraged to read that we had gotten together such a good statement, that we were so open. And then he said, because he had to speak up, you know, where he was really coming from. He said, "I realize that in India, people have a great, they very much like Jesus Christ, and they like his qualities and so on." He said, "But we can't consider that Christ was just some one of a number of some avatars or anything like that, but he's the only mediator between God and all the souls. So like right away, you see the limits of such discussion, and of course that's his viewpoint. And perhaps you can go further to discuss these things depending on the liberality of the person and his conviction also in the tradition he's in. But it would seem like there's always some kind of a tension going on. Now, another aspect of associating with devotees, and I think these things aren't easy to speak on, and you may have some slightly different viewpoints than what I say, so you can bring them out when I give you a chance. When I'm saying that we should say the devotees are right even though they are imperfect, that's a rather touchy thing to speak about. You know, at what point do we tolerate a devotee's imperfection and say he's better than an undevotee who has perhaps better morality and ethics and so on? And so here's another touchy point I'm going to bring up, and that is, I'll read the verse. And I'll tell you, I read this verse recently in a class I gave in America. In the Srimad Bhagavatam class, I was given a verse by Kapila Dev, where he was saying, if you worship the deity in the temple, but you don't see him in the soul of all people, your worship is, you're a separatist, and your worship is like throwing ghee into the ashes. And there's about five or six verses and purports in a row like that, and it's just the same point keeps being made, that you're a neophyte devotee unless you can see God is in everyone's heart as a super soul. So I was speaking about how as we walk among the people, we should always try to see like that, that there are temples of God. And I had been crammed in a lot with people because I was traveling. I was on five different airplane flights, and I just come back from the Caribbean, and I was always being crammed in with these non-devotees. But I was trying to understand that we're all fellow spirit souls, and we shouldn't hate them, shouldn't hate animals, and see the common spirit soul and try to make some kind of connection like that. But after speaking like that, then I presented something that appeared opposite, and then it has to be reconciled. And I quoted this verse, which is directly spoken by Lord Chaitanya. Asat sanga tyagi vaishnavachar stri sangi eka asaru krishna bhakta ar. A vaishnava should always avoid the association of ordinary people. Common people are very much materially attached, especially to women. Vaishnavas should also avoid the company of those who are not devotees of Lord Krishna. And simply put, the way I reconciled it was to say that we approach the non-devotees mainly to present Krishna consciousness to them in some way or another. And we don't associate with them intimately to do things that are not Krishna conscious. Now, the reality of a devotee may be that he finds it hard to make friends among the devotees in his country or where they live, and feels alienated. Of course, you don't have to only have friends within your country. When I was in Trinidad, I stayed in the overnight in my disciple's house, and his wife had a computer. I was wondering why she had a computer, and she said, well, it's mostly for association, and she types letters to some of her friends. I said, where do you have friends? She said, in Alachua, Florida. So she said, this is a kind of an association. And I know also there's one young woman in Australia who has a good friend in America. They both went through Gurukul together, and they talk together by this modern method. So sometimes you may have to reach out beyond your country, but we can get frustrated finding that I just don't find devotees who are compatible for my friendship. So, or even if you don't feel that, I'm going to open up another avenue of possibility of associating with devotees. Now, first I'll do this by reading something from the journal of Thomas Merton, who's a Catholic monk and writer. And he's talking about his reading in the Bible. And he talks about a man who wrote some commentary. He said, "Pius Abbe Filion suggests that when we are stumped and cannot find out the meaning of a passage of Scripture, we ought to pray to the sacred author, that is, to whoever it was that served as God's instrument in writing the book. The suggestion appeals to me, for I have a great, though confused, affection for the writers of the Bible. I feel closer to them than to almost any other writers I know. Isaiah, Moses, David, Matthew, Mark, Luke, and John are all part of my life. They're always about me. They look over my shoulder, earnest men belonging to the facade of a medieval cathedral. I feel that they are very concerned about me and that they want me to understand what God told them to write down, and that they have always surrounded me with solicitous prayers, and that they will always love me and protect me. They are more a part of my world than most of the people actually living in the world. I see them sometimes more really than I see the monks I live with. I know well the burnt faces of the prophets and the evangelists, transformed by the white-hot, dangerous presence of inspiration, for they looked at God as into a furnace, and the seraphim flew down and purified their lips with fire, and I read their books with joy and with holy fear, and their words become a part of me." So we also can really make friends with Prabhupada, Narada Muni, Prahlad Maharaj, Krishnadas Kaviraj Goswami, Lord Chaitanya, all the people who we read about. As he puts it, it's not exactly ordinary friendships. He's talking about how they are almost scary to be so close to them, but he loves them, and they seem to love him. So this is a kind of personal association. And there's one purport where Prabhupada mentions that. I don't have it right now. It's in the Bhagavatam, where he talks about the importance of association. He says, it can also be by Vani, not just by Vapu, and you can do this by reading their books. And I do have a quote by Prabhupada for like another category of devotee, the burnt-out devotee who says, ISKCON is all like that first letter I read. I'm not going to have anything to do with it because the devotees are all hypocrites and vicious people. So Prabhupada, he talks about that. He says, even if one thinks that there are many pseudo-devotees or non-devotees in the Krishna-conscious society, still one should stick to the society. If one thinks the society's members are not pure devotees, one can keep direct company with the spiritual master, and if there's any doubt, one should consult the spiritual master. However, unless one follows the spiritual master's instructions concerning the regular principles and chanting and hearing the holy names, one cannot become a pure devotee. So if it gets down to that you can't find, you think they're all phonies, then still you shouldn't leave that which you came to the movement for. You came for pure love of God. You came to associate with the pure devotee. It's still there. You've been very disappointed by the association of others, but they're still pure devotees. And the Lord is still there, and the process is still there for you to follow. And according to the evidence I presented earlier, it's really not that bad. All right, thank you. Hare Krishna. Any questions or comments?
Actually, I was thinking like that one time, quite negatively, and then I was really struck with one comment that Prabhupada made. Some devotees, they were quarreling about what is this gone and so on, and they asked Prabhupada, are you this gone? Hmm. And Prabhupada kind of chuckled and said, I'm not this gone. Hmm. No, I'm a member of this gone. And the way he said it, it struck me that actually, we should all see ourselves as members of ISKCON, which means our behavior, our activities reflects, on the good or bad. Mm. perception of ISKCON. So it's really, it's a nice meditation to think, well, yeah, I can actually change ISKCON if I think there's something wrong with it by my own activity. And then I thought, actually, in fact, that's the only way I can change it. I can't change it any other way, because you can shout and you can argue and you can politicize and you can do so many things, but you can't. We have to really see how much we can do. And I think that, you know, that was Prabhupada directly getting struck. It struck me that, you know, that's what I have to do, actually. It's daunting, but it's
yeah, there was you mentioned that Prabhupada did that. I remember one of our godbrothers doing that. Someone wrote to him about how he was treated harshly by other devotees. He wrote to Shivaram Maharaj, and Shivaram Maharaj wrote back and said, yeah, or something like, welcome to the club. He said, this is not the movement that I joined. It's not the same, but I feel that what I have to do is try to make it that way by my own contribution, rather than just quit or say they're all bad eggs and add to the negativity. Maharaj, would you like to speak to this?
That sounds... Yes, and sometimes I also complain and feel... I realize, well, these, they're hypocrites. But then, actually, in order to realize that they're hypocrites, is when I realize that I'm a hypocrite myself. That's a tough thing. But then he's the God. Then he like create the thoughts of it. So then, of course, I can start with myself then to counteract the hypocritical situations. And that's a real challenge, because, you know, it's easy to put the blame out there, so to say. I set responsibility for, and then I feel that you get more strength when you accept responsibility, rather than giving away your responsibility by saying it's the problem is out there, so to say.
I feel like that too. There's a class of devotees who will be very proactive to try to do away with hypocrisy by, you know, forming new rules and regulations and tribunals. And I guess there's a place for that too. But there's a place for what you said, and I feel my contribution's more like that than becoming a judge or forming bodies of regulation to stop the activities of hypocrites, like the police state. I thought of another incident. There was one devotee lady, and she was getting more and more discouraged about the activities of devotees, and she called up her mother for some kind of sympathy or something. Her mother was a Catholic, and she said, you know, she kind of confessed to her that the devotees in the Hare Krishna movement are like this and this. I just don't like to be with them. And the mother said, yeah. She said, I know what it's like. She said, I feel that way about the Catholics in the church too. She said, but there's nobody else to be with, I feel. I have to stick to my own religion. And, oh, thanks, Mom. So it was that, with all thy faults, I love the conclusion made by the religion is so important, a part of my life, that if I'm disappointed with the people who are in it, that's a great disappointment then. But the solution to it isn't to, you know, quit the religion wholesale and find all kinds of neat people who won't name their God as Krishna. There is neophyte preaching, I guess, that all the non-devotees are demons and this and that. And then when some people they quit the association of devotees and they go out, or they don't even have to quit, but they start associating with non-devotees and they say, hey, this isn't true, what we've been told. These are nice people after all. And then that's not a wrong conclusion, because the other was immature preaching. But sometimes they get starry-eyed about the non-devotees and their morality and their ethics and their way of life. What do you think, Srilavati? Because I know you like to be with the people of the world, not just with the devotees.
Yeah, I like to respect that. My mind is going somewhere else about when we see the devotees and we see their faults, it's like we're putting ourselves up on a pedestal. It's like if I see somebody's faults, then I'm seeing I'm better than them, and then I was how do I deal with that? I was going back to Maharaj at Sunita Krishna Maharaj at the Bhakti Riksha the other night. He was saying that instead of thinking how great a devotee I am, I want to serve the other devotees in some way, to serve them. And am I going off the point here?
No.
And that helps me. That helps me see that my qualities, I'm not superior to the other devotees. And ultimately, everybody has faults, even the non-devotees, and I have faults either. I may see the faults in the non-devotees, and I may associate with them, but at one time, that was me also, so I can't judge.
I personally feel I'm very conservative about this, although I like to sometimes have non-conservative opinions, you know, and to write in a non-conservative way, but my nature is not very outward, and since I came to Krishna consciousness, I really like to be with the people who with whom I can name my God, and when I'm not with them, I really feel awkward with the non-devotees, because there's so little that we have in common, or if we start developing commonness, it's a little suspect or something. Prabhupada does?
Yeah. Yeah. Guru Maharaj, because in the last few years I've had to interact a lot more with the non-devotee world than I would have. And I was reading an article by a teacher in a magazine recently where he pointed out Irish people have a fear of being in a minority. I don't know why in particular could the Irish people, but I suppose I can relate to that to some degree, because interacting with people, I always have this little depression sometimes. You know, you're out there and you're always different, you're always weird, you know. But then I have this thing that Prabhupada said also, that this is very natural. I was just reading one of Prabhupada's books where he says that people don't perform the ancient process of yoga because it takes so long. But as Krishna consciousness, it's a process for the short lifespan of our age. And I'm thinking, I don't find it so short. I've been involved for a while, and still I find it difficult
to reach perfection in Krishna consciousness.
Yeah, to reach perfection. And then also, as Srinavati was saying, I do have this difficulty as well, because I have some people I relate to, but I don't fall into the trap of these people are wonderful and devotees are not, because I understand that principle. But at the same time, you get to a level, because it's a working relationship. For example, I met a devotee I used to teach yesterday on the street, and he was going around with a suit and tie looking for a job, and he looked like a real lone figure there on his own now, you know, trying to find a position in the world. And to some degree I felt a little bit like, not that I did personally, but I let him down, because I had created a structure where he could find a place. So there's that difficulty for me. Like, on the one hand, you tell the devotees, well, only associate with devotees, but then on the material level they've got to live, they've got to survive, and there's no there's no structure there. So there's that difficulty. But on the other hand, as Shalavi said, I see that people there, they're not that much different. You know, I like to keep that attitude, because I remember the old days, like you said, there was classes before you got a Sankirtan, they're all bags of stool, they're animals, and I felt like I was going into a jungle, you know. I'm so different, I'm coming down from Mars for the day, and I don't even speak the same language. But it's really like, whereas I find it better, psychologically, maybe wrong, but this helps me to rather think, actually, they're not that different. They can relate to this. You know, people come up to me and they read the books and they say things like, so do you really think that I'm, you know, they're in trouble. So are you just trying to convert me? Is that really, you know, because nobody, like, if I thought my relationship with somebody was, at the end of the day, there's some hidden agenda there they want to. Mm. So I suppose it's difficult for me to be honest, even when a non-devotee, because I don't like Christians coming up to me and being very friendly. They do this, you know, every devotee experience. So what's your name? Oh, tell us about your God. You know, so the only reason is to then suddenly hit you with this. So, anyway. I don't want to sound negative. I mean, I'm saying it.
No, you said a lot of things, yeah. especially that point really hits, that we have to make a world for the devotees that they can live in, you know, without being driven out again, the lack of some material facilities. Or what to speak of lack of loving, friendly dealings. If you lend a devotee $100 and he doesn't pay you back, and you lend a non-devotee $100 and he does pay you back, you know, you think, well, I just got burnt out by a devotee. And the devotee says, well, it's mercy or something. Or just take it as Krishna's arrangement. So there are people who cheat and take advantage.